Thank you to Ami and Aviva for hosting us all this evening once again. I look around, I see, Baruch Hashem, many familiar faces, some new faces. This is, I think it's either the third or fourth year that we're getting together during this time between Pesach and Shavuos to talk about this topic. And the theme this year of the power of positive speech is one that continues to resonate. We can come back to it year after year. So we thank Ami and Aviva for this evening, for this whole project. And of course, as you know, this project is really inspired about using the Koach HaDibur, the Koach of positive speech, in honor of their wonderful children, especially their young model for us about the value of speech, and that is Tani, who we're thinking about tonight. And if you want to FaceTime him in, we can always wave. Everybody can wave on FaceTime. I think that might be.
We did about an hour ago.
Okay, you already got tonight. It's already counted. Sfira, he's good. He's good. So this year we're thinking about the power of positive speech. And so the goal at the end of the night is going to be for everybody to take out and use their cell phones. And I'm going to get to that at the end, for those of you who are already texting somebody, so you're ahead of the game right now. So one of the challenges of sitting in this wonderful environment is that... No, it's good. It's good, it keeps me warm. But the other challenge is when there's no shtender. So I'll be honest, it would not be the first time that I had texted while giving a shiur. You know, it's one thing to text while you're sitting in a shiur. It's another thing to text while giving a shiur. But we're going to talk about texting, and that's going to kind of be the landing point. But the idea of the impact, the power of positive speech is what we want to reflect on tonight, and how that has an effect on us and an effect on other people, and then maybe even a deeper level. There is a professor in UCLA. She's a professor of, I guess her expertise is mindfulness. And she is a behavioral geneticist. I don't know exactly what that even means. It has something to do with how we act. And her name is Susan Smalley. And she has some very interesting research where she points out that the words that we encounter, certainly the words that we speak, have a profound effect on us in ways that we don't necessarily even consider. Researchers found that sentences that included descriptions of and a focus on the elderly, people who spoke about the elderly, led the research subjects who were speaking about the elderly to walk more slowly. Just talking about the elderly caused the subjects to walk more slowly. Individuals who read words, quote, loving kindness, sentences including the words loving kindness, showed increases in self-compassion, improved mood, and reduced anxiety. So the things that we say really have an effect on us. There is a guy and his wife, they have a team. His name is John Gottman. John Gottman he's the goon, the genius of our time of marriage. He's in the University of Washington, and together with his wife, Julie, they created something, a research lab that they nicknamed the Love Lab, where they could take a couple and put them in this lab, and they have their little cadre of minions who help them with their research. They can detect within, I think, about 10 minutes, with over 90% accuracy, whether or not this couple that they're talking to is going to stay married or going to get divorced, based on their interactions. They're fascinating thinkers. They have a website with a blog, a lot of very thoughtful stuff. They also now have expanded beyond marriage also into parenting. So they have a very interesting, this is a piece on parenting. This one is called Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child, The Heart of Parenting. This one is by John Gottman. But they have, you can look online, they have seminars and they have shiurim and all kinds of things. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that John Gottman has taken a path that has led him to observant lifestyle, which is a whole nother fascinating story. I heard about him first through Dr. Belkovitz, and then I looked online, and he has awesome seminars, and he has Talmidim Mubhakim. They all tell the Torah over in different ways. So in one of his blog posts, in talking about putting together healthy relationships in terms of the context of a marriage, he has an interesting yesod. He says that you need to, when you interact with a spouse, he says you need to put your feelings into words. Whether you're, you know, he's talking about building intimate conversation, and he says it's very important in an intimate conversation to put your feelings into words. Why? So he suggests, not so much because when you put your feelings into words, you convey what's going on in your mind, but because when we put our feelings into words, we feel better about ourselves. Because the effect of putting those words out there makes us feel, whether it's validated or that we can concretize what we're saying, we can communicate clearer, there is this cathartic effect on us when we speak. So it's not coincidental then that when we daven, it's not just enough to meditate, we need to actually use words. Because if you open the diary, it's a very interesting thing to look at. In the diary of the Holy Piasetzner Rebbe, Rav Klon Miskalman Shapira, Hashem Yikom Damo, Zchus Yagun Aleinu, Rav Klon Miskalman, so we're not going to talk about him too much tonight, but just I'll regal achas on one foot. He wrote in a very important work for teenagers when he was younger, before the war, in late 1920s, 1929. But then, in the early 1930s, he had a personal diary that he kept. And then, when the war broke out, he gave sermons in the Warsaw Ghetto. He had another manuscript that he had worked on, which was a follow-up to the earlier book that he published. And then he had the pieces of this diary. Unfortunately, he survived the liquidation of the Warsaw Ghetto, but he was taken to a labor camp, and then on the 4th of Cheshvan in 1943, this labor camp was liquidated, and he was murdered outside a small camp called Troniki. But before he left the ghetto, he had a contact who was a rabbi and one of the members of Emanuel Ringelblum's Onig Shabbos archives, which was a secular enterprise documenting life in the ghetto. And there was one man whose name was Rav Shimon Uberband, Hashem Yikom Damo, who was responsible for cataloging the religious life of Jews. He himself was a Rav and a historian. And somehow, we don't know exactly how, historians don't know 100% how, but it's likely, we know that Rav Shimon Uberband knew the Piasetzner. He tells one story about the two of them. And it seems that in the dead of winter, in early 1943, the Rebbe took his writings, the drushes from the war, he took the pieces of his diary, and he took this other work called Hachsharas of Reichem, and he gave them to Shimon Uberband, to Reb Shimon Uberband, or someone, one of his associates, because Reb Shimon Uberband was killed in 1942. He gave them to the Ringelblum Onig Shabbos archives, and they were buried in a metal can under the ghetto. Fast forward several years, a Polish kid, full of factory worker, construction guys digging in the ghetto, and they find the can, and this is a whole nother long story, would take us all night, how they deciphered the Yiddish writing on the top of it to get it to a group of Jews. The Rebbe had written a letter on the top saying, if there are any rabbis left in Warsaw, please send it to them. If there aren't, he had a brother who was a Hasidic Zionist known as the Admora Chalutz, living in Tel Aviv at that time, and he says, send it to my brother, which he did. So these writings arrive in Tel Aviv, and they're published separately. One is called the Eish Kodesh. That was his sermons from the war. Then he has the Hachsharas of Reichem. And then he has this little diary called Tzav Viziras. Tzav Viziras literally means command and encourage. So in the diary, which is not long, you can go through it. It's not a very difficult work. He has something interesting. He writes his own tefillos. He says, the Ribbono Shalom should help me with such and such an issue. And he talks about the importance of verbalizing your relationship and your conversation with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why, he says, so interesting. He says, because it's a cathartic experience to talk it out with somebody. That when you put something into words, it has a powerful effect on you that you feel like, almost like I got this off my chest. So when I verbalize something, I can feel better about myself. I can feel like I can kind of grasp it better. So this idea of how we use our words and the importance of articulating things in words certainly affects us. But of course, it doesn't just affect us, it affects others. I recently came across some research by a Harvard professor by the name of Dr. Martin Teicher, T-E-I-C-H-E-R, not to be confused with the Kollel alumnus, Rabbi Michael Teicher, also doctor, not at Harvard, in Chicago, even better. So he did some research that he presented recently at the Royal Society of Medicine late last year in 2007 about the effect of words on the brain. And what he found was mamash astonishing, that, God forbid, verbal abuse of children whose brains are still in their formative stages, the words, the negative words that these children listen to affected their brain. That they can track the impact on the brain, not just of, God forbid, a physical trauma, but even language, words, have such an effect that they can even shape the development of the brain of a child. So kal v'chomer, how much an encouraging word can affect somebody. Nechama has an uncle who was a principal for quite a few years in a school. I don't want to say where. He was the principal of a school, and there was a girl in this school who came from a complicated family situation. It was a blended family, and it was a very complicated social situation, and this girl came into this class in the school, and because of the dynamic that was going on, she had a really rough go, and the other students made her life very difficult. So the principal called her into the office one day to inquire how it's going, because he had heard that there were things that were going on. So she started to describe how difficult it is for her to manage in this environment where, you know, how the kids treat her. You can imagine, in fifth grade girls, what that... I don't know, I was never a fifth grade girl, and we don't have any fifth grade girls, but the Robinsons can tell you what fifth grade girls are like. I don't know. Only wonderful, right? Easy, very easy to raise fifth grade girls, it seems like.
It's the other girl.
Right. So the girl says to him, she says, you know, she describes him how hard it is to be in this class. So he says, how do you manage every day? How do you manage? So she says, you know, I manage because of something that one of the girls said to me. She said, I was sitting by myself at the lunch table one day. I don't know exactly how long ago it was, he said. He said, and another girl came over to sit down next to me, and she just sat down next to me and was eating lunch. And then when she got up, this other girl said to this poor girl, she said to her, don't worry, I'll always be your friend. And then she left the lunch table. So this little girl said to the principal, she said, that's how I go on every day. Because this girl said to me, don't worry, I'll always be your friend. So he said to me, look at the effect that words can have on someone. Words have an effect on us, and they have an effect on other people. But perhaps words have an even more powerful, a deeper effect. And this is what I kind of want to develop just a little bit together with everybody. So when we go to a wedding, many of us here have been to wonderful, many Jewish weddings. You go to a wedding and they get up to recite the brachos under the chuppah, the sheva brachos. How often do we think about the brachos that are being recited at a sheva brachos? When we sit there, do we ever think about what a weird selection of brachos those are? And there's a specific bracha which is repeated in different forms, in different ways. Now, each of these brachos has tremendous profundity and a lot of complex, you know, halachic background and understanding and depth, and the Gemara Rashi at the beginning of Maseches Ksubos outlines each one. But there is a pattern. Two brachas have the same root. Which two brachas have the same root? Okay, great. Okay, Simcha is one theme. So I got that. There are very few times that are as joyous in a life cycle than Simcha. So you would think Simcha is going to make sense. That's why I call it Simcha b'ma'ono. Perfect. Simcha, a key theme, you'll find it. What other theme repeats in those brachas that are peculiar? What's that? Yeah. Yotzer. Yotzer ha'adam. That's the first one. That's the one that sometimes, if I go to a wedding, as the YU rabbi, you know, they give it, it's only two words, they give, that's the easy one. I want to make sure I can read Hebrew, so they'll give me that. That's like, that's a good bracha. Now with the whiteboard, I can graduate to the sos tosis, I think, for some. But okay, whatever. It's good. So yotzer ha'adam, and then you come back to that same theme. Asher yotzer es ha'adam b'tzalmo. So why is it that the Yetziras HaAdam is being invoked at a wedding? I don't know. Any takers? You better be ready.
I am.
You better. why would you say? Okay, right. So there's an element of, there's a creative element here. So When this couple gets married, they create a new home, they create a new identity, they create a soul that's melded together. Great. So here's my question. Why is it that when Chazal formulated this Nusach HaBracha, they chose the Yetzirah as the model? Because the first time that Adam HaRishon is created, in the end of Perek Aleph, it doesn't say that the Ribono Shel Olam was the Yotzer. It's he was the Borei. Bereshis bara Elokim, Vayivra, he created Vayivra Elokim. Why is it Yotzer? Why is it not Vayivra? Which seems to be an earlier reflection of the concept of creation. So that's one thing to think about. The other way to look at this question comes from a pasuk in the Navi that we think about around the time of the Yom Noraim. The Navi tells us, Kuchu imachem dvarim v'shuvu el Hashem. Take for yourselves words and return to the Ribono Shel Olam. So the question is, why are you taking words? What are the words that you're supposed to take? You might have argued, actually, that you know what you should take to the Ribono Shel Olam on Yom Kippur? You should take your deeds, the things that you did. So what is it about the dvarim that is essential in the process of tshuva? So perhaps both of these are two sides of the same coin that we can think about in our own lives, and that is the depth of speech really has to do with the concept of creation. That when we speak, we create. That's why the Mishnah tells us in Berakhot Avos, Ba'asar ma'amaros nivra ha'olam. God fashioned the world in 10 statements. Ma'amar. Why did it have to be a ma'amar? It could have been with 10 gestures or with 10 fingers. There are a lot of images that Hashem could have given. But what he's trying to model for us, because we really don't understand what it means that God speaks or God acts, right? The Ribono Shel Olam is beyond that. But what he's telling us is that when we speak, we create, because that's what he did. Whatever that means, the world came into being through speech. The phrase Bereshis bara Elokim, the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, that is considered to be a ma'amar. God spoke that, as it were. When you speak, you create. What do you mean when you speak, you create? Because in the world, let's say, taking the world of Chassidus, you break down our existence into three realms. There is the realm of Machshava, of thought. There is the realm of Dibor, speech. And then there is the realm of Maisa, action. So in the realm of thought, Everything is just abstract. Everything is just ethereal. It's not tangible. And in halacha, you know what you say about thoughts? Dvarim shebelev, einam dvarim. What you think really doesn't matter. It's not substantial. Let's say I have in mind, I'm going to sell my house. Or I'm going to sell my car. And nobody knows that I'm selling my car because I'm going to go on Aliyah. If I put up a lawn sign saying I'm going Aliyah, I'm sending my car, Tosfos says it's a different story. But let's say I decide I'm going to sell my car because I want to go on Aliyah. And then I change my mind. So, Dov, you buy my car, I come back to you 3 weeks later, I say, you know, I understand that you bought my car, but I only had in mind to sell my car because I was planning on going on Aliyah. But now that I'm not going on Aliyah, I really could use my car back. The halacha says, nobody knew you were going on Aliyah. You never said anything about going on Aliyah. Dvarim shebelev, the fact that you thought it, einam dvarim. So in the world of thought, it doesn't really exist. And then the world of action, of course, everything does exist. What is dibur? Dibur is the translation of the thought into the theater of the real. It's when you take something that doesn't really exist. It exists only in your mind. You know, I don't know how many of you have this experience, but sometimes things will happen at home, and Nechama will say to me, I didn't know anything about that. You know, I'll be walking out the door somewhere, and she'll be like, where are you going? I'm like, well, you know I have, and she'll be like, you never told me that. That never happens never. In your house. Never. She's like, you never told me that. I'm like, I could have sworn I told you. She would say, no, it's in your head. You think you told me. You never... I did tell her. I'm telling you. I told her. But she says I didn't tell her. The problem is, unfortunately, she's right. Dvarim shebelev, einam dvarim. The fact that I thought I told her I had committed to such and such a thing, unless I tell it to her, it doesn't really exist. It's not in the world of asiya. So only when we say these things do we create them. People can have incredibly brilliant ideas, but until you put them into words, they're not really significant. That's why people go, they go to conferences, you know, we're sitting in the presence of somebody who could give this talk much better than I, Rabbi Linzer. He goes to these conferences, people present papers. Why does he go to these conferences? Because people have ideas. They have brilliant ideas. But it's not enough for somebody else to have a brilliant idea. They have to verbalize it. They have to express it so that the rest of us can benefit from it. Until somebody puts it down into a talk and then publishes it in a paper and then it's, you know, out there in the world of research, it's just in your head. When you speak it, you've actually created that idea in the real world. So if that's true, now I can understand why it is that we talk about speech in the realm of tshuva, and we talk about it in the realm of a marriage. The Rambam tells us, in the beginning of Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam tells us that a person... I'll just preface with one word. It's a good idea to do tshuva. Whether the Rambam says it's a mitzvah or not, I'm not saying it's not a good thing to do. It's a good idea. The Rambam says that when you do tshuva, he doesn't say you have to do tshuva, which is a... But I'm saying, and no one should walk out and say, you know, the guy said you don't have to do tshuva because the Rambam doesn't say it. When you do tshuva, the Rambam says, kishe yase tshuva v'yosha mecheto, chayav lehisvados lefnei akel baruch hu. A person is obligated to verbalize the things that we did. And the Rambam says, after quoting a pasuk, ze vidui dvarim. That's the vidui of the words. Meaning it's not enough to think, to take a mental accounting of the things that we did, we have to actually verbalize them to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have to have that conversation. Why? A, because it makes it real. But B, now that we understand that really through words we create, you know what we do during the process of tshuva, which the Rambam outlines later in Perek Zion? We recreate ourselves. And that's why you need words, perhaps. You need to say the words, because by saying them and verbalizing them and owning them, you can recreate yourself. How often is it in life that we wish that we could just recreate ourselves, to give us a new start? All the time. And the amazing thing that the Rambam tells us in Perek Zayin is that the good news is we can do that. Just by using our words, we can recreate ourselves. It has the power to recreate ourselves, and it has the effect of recreating ourselves. Because let's say in our mind, let's say I have a really nasty relationship with somebody. And then one day I decide I'm going to do tshuva, and in my mind I feel I'm in a new place. I'm not going to have the same connection with that person. I'm going to start from scratch. But that person doesn't know it. I haven't actualized, I haven't created that reality because I haven't spoken about it. Achiratas chaveru, the Rambam says it's between two people. So by speaking to that person, I recreate that relationship. So we feel that, we know that when we pick up that phone and talk to other people, we know that we create that relationship again through words. And it's the same thing for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And maybe that's why Chazal, when they chose the word that has to do with creation when it comes to a marriage, they dafka chose Yotzer and not Bore. Why? Because when the Ribbono Shel Olam created man, as Rav Soloveitchik develops in Adam 1 and Lonely Man of Faith, Adam 1, you could call him, was just a biological character. He was just Afar Minu Adama. It's only in Perek Beis, when it's Vayitzer Hashem Elokim, Hashem created in a new way, what did He give us? He gave us a Nishmas Chayim, a living spirit. What is that living spirit? So Unkelus translates, Ruach Mamalala, a speaking spirit, the capacity for speech. So the difference between Bore and Yotzer is that Bore is physical, but Yotzer is spiritual. It's the capacity for speech. It's the Ruach Mamalala. So what the Ribbono Shel Olam is telling us is that the ultimate creation of mankind was through Yotzer, through the Neshama, through the capacity for speech. And that is what's going to make this marriage. It's the capacity for speech. John Gottman knew, he figured out what the Ribbono Shel Olam knew a long time ago in two ways. Number one, if somebody, a man approaches a woman, generally speaking, you know, in Emma's one Friday morning in all the hullabaloo, and he hands her two bagels, so she might say thank you and go on her way. But if the man says to her, Haria amikudeshesli, with these two bagels and the two guys standing behind me, if she says yes, that's it. That's it. Because except for some very unusual circumstances, it's the amira, it's the dibur, that creates the marriage. Right? The kinyan is affected by the transfer of the money, but it's the amira. Without the amira, in most cases, it's not meaningful. So the amira creates, the speech creates the marriage, and that's what sustains it. It's the speech that exists between the two people. The power of speech, it has a profound effect on us. It has an amazing effect on other people, and that's because it's rooted in this notion that Dibur is about Yetzirah, it's about creation. So tonight we're thinking about committing ourselves until Shavuos, just until Shavuos, to the effect of positive speech in the following sense. We are talking about the idea, the concept, of using the bracha, that is technology, because it can also be a klala, but using the bracha that it is in the power of positive speech. Right? The idea that speech has a positive effect on other people, it can be really remarkable. And that's why what we talked about is thinking about a text message and what that means for the power of positive speech. I'll give you an example, and then everybody is going to have their homework. It'll be on social media, there will be videos and reminders, but the idea is to send one text every day, one text that's a positive speech, because of what that can do for that person. You might be able to create their world for them. Think about, you know, go through your phone. Yes, my phone does text. So you go through your phone. It does text. That's why we had to limit it to texting. You scroll through your I can get around just fine. You scroll through your contacts, every day, scroll through your contacts, and there might be somebody who you haven't contacted in a while, who, if you sent them a two-line text that says, "How you doing?" you could create their day. How often are we standing online, you know, whether it's in Jewel or in the parking lot leaving Shacharis, or at work or at home, and we have a couple minutes and we're just doing this. We're just flipping. Imagine if we harness the power of positive speech, we could have an incredible impact on somebody. The impact that you could have on somebody's day, you know, maybe it's somebody who is lonely. Maybe it's an elderly person who doesn't have that much going on. You know, sometimes many of us are extremely busy, but other people aren't necessarily as busy as we are. I had this when I went to visit. Once I went to visit my grandmother, and I realized, you know, I'm getting so many emails a day, it's like totally lo shayach. How many emails a day does she get? Not so many emails. When she gets one email, it's like a big thing. First of all, just to open the email is a whole, you know, she has the little tab on the computer that says press here. The Chamahand wrote it, the sticky tab. So for the last many years, she's still able to do her email. How many emails does she get? Not a lot of emails. So I realized to myself, it'll take me 10 seconds to write an email. What does that mean to somebody who doesn't get a lot of emails? Some of us, our phone, we still think it's ringing and it's buzzing because it's always buzzing. So thank God many of us are busy and we have a lot of people, but a lot of people don't have that buzzing. They don't have the phantom buzz in their pants just randomly. They don't have that. So sometimes it's a shtickle crazy, but it's a beautiful bracha that we have people, we have stuff going on. Not everybody has that. So imagine if you think of somebody who doesn't have the pants buzzing all the time and you send them a text. I'll close with one story before we daven Maariv. This story was shared with me by my close chaver, Rabbi Eli Michel, who is a rabbi in Livingston, New Jersey. He introduced me to this writer. Her name is Deborah Tannen. She's a researcher about speech. She has a book called Talking Voices, Repetition, Dialogue, and Imagery in Conversational Discourse. So she researches and talks about speech and language and how people communicate. So some of you have heard this story because it is mamish, an unbelievable story. And I'm going to keep telling it. She describes how she had a great aunt. She says, "My great aunt had a love affair when she was in her 70s. Obese, balding, and legs misshapen by arthritis, she did not fit the stereotype of a woman romantically involved. But she was, by a man also in his 70s, who lived in a nursing home, but occasionally spent weekends with her in her apartment. In trying to tell me what this relationship meant to her, my aunt told me of a conversation. One evening, she had dinner at the home of friends. When she returned to her home that evening, her man friend called. In the course of their conversation, he asked her, 'What did you wear?' When she told me this, she began to cry. 'Do you know how many years it's been since anyone asked me what I wore?' The power of positive speech. We just need to get a little creative. You know, Yotzer HaAdam, we have that capacity to create, but as the Rashi says in the beginning in Bereishis, first the Ribono Shel Olam had a machshava, and then he created through the Dibur. First we have to just think, we have to spend some time, and that's what's so beautiful about this evening, that in all of our busyness, we're taking out one night, as we have done these past years, to come together, a fireside chat, to take a step back and think about the impact of our speech on other people. And how, for the next, you know, Emir Tzashem, Lag BaOmer is coming next Thursday. Some people are counting that very carefully. Between now and Shavuos, how many days are there? How many times can we send a text to somebody and impact them in this way? We could be like the Ribono Shel Olam, kivyachol. He created the world. we can also create a world. We can have that impact on people. And so I thank you all for coming, for giving me the opportunity to reflect on many of these ideas. And I look forward to sharing this journey with you, although my Facebook skills, I can tell you, are not exactly existent. But through the Kollel's Facebook and social media, we're going to be able to use this medium to use the koach of dibor, the power of positive speech, to create so much goodness in our world. Thank you. And good evening.